Ration Sakhun Daf Tzaduk Beis. We will begin on Daf Tzaduk Beis in an hour at the end of the second line. A Gemara continues discussing the episode between Yaakov and the Malach, who we established in our previous year with the Sorah Shel Esav, was the Malach of Esav. And the Malach of Esav, we know, pushed the Gid Anosh of Yaakov out of its place. But ultimately, as we also discussed, Yaakov Avinu prevailed. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk. The pasuk says in Hosea, "V'yosha amalach v'yuchal bochal v'yisalalein v'ischananloi." They struggled. They both struggled for supremacy, and what he triumphed. They wept and he beseeched him. Says the Gemara, "Any day me nasasar lami." We don't know who ultimately prevailed. For although, as we just said, we all know that Yaakov Avinu prevailed, but we also know, as we're learning Parag Gid Anosha, that Yaakov's Gid Anosha was actually displaced. And therefore the Gemara is saying, who is considered the ultimate one that prevailed? Kishu Omer, when the Pasuk says, Kisarisa Emelakim, when the pasuk says regarding Yaakovinu, Kisarisa Elokim, we see from here Havoimi Yaakov Nasa Salamalach, that it was Yaakov that had the ultimate upper hand. And as the Taras Chaim explains, what happened over here, the struggle between Yaakov and the Sarah Shel Esav, was because the Sarah Shel Esav was trying to take away from Yaakov Avinu. As we know, Esav sold the Bechorah to Yaakov Avinu, and the Sarah Shel Esav was trying to get back that, to retract on that deal, so to speak. And as the Mefarshim indeed explained, we know that in the times of the Avos, when a Shvuah took place, they would swear on the Yoreach. They would put their hand on the thigh. We find so between Avram and Eliezer. When Avram asked Eliezer to make a shvuah to him, he put his hand on his thigh. So what happened over here was that the Sarah Shel Esav, the Malach of Esav, wanted that the deal, the Bechorah that was sold, should go back. And therefore he tried to put his hand on the Yerech of Yaakov, that he should not, that shvuah, which culminated that transaction between Yaakov and Esav, should be void. But, says the Gemara, Yaakov Avinu was able to prevail, and we, Klal Yisrael, are considered the B'nai B'chori. In fact, he goes on to explain very beautifully, now we can understand why when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, immediately we find Amalek coming to attack them. We know that they were in a very vulnerable state. They were in a very strong state. Such gewaltige nisim had happened with them. And now Amalek is coming to attack them. So he explains, because when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they were called B'ni B'chayri Yisrael. They were called the B'ni B'chayri of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Amalek, who is the descendant of Esav, could not accept that Klal Yisrael should have this title of B'nai B'chayri. And immediately they came to attack Klal Yisrael. And he goes on to explain, that's why we find that Moshe Rabbeinu specifically asked Yeshua to lead the battle against Amalek, and not that Moshe Rabbeinu himself led the battle. For he explains that we know that Yeshua was a descendant of Yosef. And we know that Yaakov Avinu, when he gave the Bechorah, actually to Yosef. So to show Amalek that no, we're not accepting what you're saying, and that we are indeed the Bechorah of Klal Yisrael, we went out to battle, and just like Yaakov prevailed against the Sarah Shel Esav, so too did Yeshua prevail against Amalek, establishing that we are the Bechor of Hashem. And the Pasuk, as we read, continued, Bocha v'yischanaloi, any day mi bocha l'mi. We don't know who was the one that cried, because as the Mepharshim explained, even though we've just proven that Yaakov was the one that ultimately prevailed, but still, Yaakov Avinu was hurt on the Gid Anosha. Kshomer, Yoimer Shalcheni, the Malach cried out to Yaakov Avinu that, let me go. Have an Omer from here we see the Malach Bochel Yaakov. And I saw from the Pnei Menachem that this Bechia, this crying of the Malach to Yaakov, showing that he realizes who Yaakov Avinu is and who Hashem is ultimately the reason that we in Golus all these years are suffering from Esav, because he cried out recognizing the supremacy of Yaakov Avinu. The Pasuk says, Ki sarisa imalakim v'manashim, Amarama, remez ramazloi, he gave him, he said, he showed him a remez, Shasidim shnei sarim l'lotzis menu, that two great leaders will come out from Klal Yisrael, Rosh Goylus of Abavo, the Rosh Goylus, the leader in Klal Yisrael in the Golus, the Nasi Shebeis Yisrael. But on the other hand, Mikan Ramazloi, he also showed him Golus, that there will be a Golus, because that's why there will be Klal Yisrael actually in Bavo. The Mepharshim explained that what's Pshat Kir Sarisa Imalakim Vimanoshim? Imalakim refers to the Nasi Shebeis Yisrael. Why is he called Alakim? I saw two Pshatim. One Pshat that I saw is because he is the one that he had Smicha. In Eretz Yisrael there was Smicha, but as we know in Chutz La'aretz there wasn't Smicha. That's one Pshat that I saw. Another Pshat is that we know that the year, the months, and the dates of the year are all established through the Beis Din. And whatever Beis Din says is the new month, that's what's going to be. And as the Gemara says in a number of places, Atem afil shagiyim, Atem afil mezidim, Atem afil matam. Even if we're making an error, that is, whatever Beis Din paskins, that is the way the month is established. So we see that the Nasi has the power as Kaviyochel, as an Elohim, that he could prevail even over God Kaviyochel, and it's his word that stands when it's going to be considered the new month, not anyone else's. Ubegefen, the Pasuk teaches us about the dream of the Sar HaMashkim, and the dream says, Ubegefen Shloisha Sarigim. And in the dream, and in the vine, he says to him, there were three branches. Arachi bar Abba Amaraf. Eivu Shloisha Sarim Geim Hayotzim Yisrael B'chol Dor V'Dor. These are the three great leaders of Klal Yisrael in each generation. Pam Shnayim Kan V'Echabat Yisrael. Sometimes two of them are in Chutz La'aretz, and one is in Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes Shnayim Beretz Yisrael Ve'echad Kan. Two are in Eretz Yisrael and one is here. And says the Gemara, Yav Rabbanu Inayu, Rabbanu Ukva, Rabbanu Nechemya Ben Barat the Rav. They looked at these people as people who fit the description. So Mepharshim point out that, as we're going to learn this now, the dream of the Sar HaMashkim is very much connected to Klal Yisrael. And how does it come that the Sar HaMashkim, who wasn't even a member of Klal Yisrael, should dream a dream that had such messages to us, to Klal Yisrael? So I saw a very beautiful vort. The Mepharshim all point out the famous Medrash, that when Rivka was pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, when she would walk by a Beis Avodah Zarah, she would feel pain because Esav would want to leave. And when she would walk out of the through the Beis HaMedrash, she would feel pain because Yaakov would want to leave. And Mepharshim asked, Esav wants to go to Beis Avodah Zarah, we could understand. But why would Yaakov want to leave his mother's womb? Don't we know that the Gemara says that when a child is in its mother's womb, Melamdim Noisa, they teach him Kol HaTorah Kula? So Yaakov was learning Torah with the Malach. Why would he want to leave that environment? The answer is, because even if you're learning Torah from such a great Rebbe as a Malach, if you're learning Torah together with an Esav, it's not worth learning Torah, it's not worth being in such an environment. So that's when we speak about a poor environment, how much more so when we're in a positive environment. And therefore, in the situation of the Sar HaMashkim, who certainly, obviously, wasn't a very great individual. However, even though he wasn't a very great individual, he was together in the womb with Yosef. And Yosef, of course, was the great tzaddik. That had such a positive impact on him that he should be able to see even dreams of such great messages. Rav Amar, Rav says that who was he referring to? Eilish Shloisha Sari Goyim Shemalamim Tzchus Yisrael B'chol Davidar. These refer to three angels of the Goyim who speak positively about Klal Yisrael in every generation. Tanya, Rav Elazar Omer, Rav Elazar says, Geffen Za Olam. Geffen refers to the world. Shloisha Sarigim Za Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Refer to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Vuk Kiparachas also Nitzah. Elohu Imas refers to the Imas. Hefshilash Glesah Novim. Elo Hashvatim. Amalei Reb Shua. So Yeshua says, and Farshim say, that according to this interpretation, we could understand how Yosef made the mistake that we're all familiar with, that Yosef asked that the Malach that the Sar HaMashkin should speak favorably about him to Paroi. And the question, of course, is how does Yosef come to rely on the Sar HaMashkin? The answer is that now that we see that the Sar HaMashkin was having such a very powerful dream with such powerful messages, that's how Yosef came to make the mistake to ask him to have him in mind. Amar Reb Shua, to which Reb Shua says, how could you say that that is the interpretation of the dream? The chimaron al adam ashahaya, do we show a person what was? V'loy maron al adam, when a person has a dream, ela masha osaliyos, they show him what will be, not what was. So Masha asks that we know that the Gemara says in Masech the Brachos, e maron al adam, so we see that a person does dream about what he's thinking. So what's pshat in this Gemara's question? So Masha answers, of course they show a person his dream by what he's dreaming, by what he's thinking. But even though they show him what he's thinking, the Herhurei Liboy are, that's what the subject of the dream is, but the dream speaks to the future, not to the past. And here we see that the dream is speaking about the past, and that's why he couldn't understand this interpretation, and therefore he explained Geffen's a Torah. Shloisha Surigim refer to Moshe v'Aaron u'Miriam. V'Kaprachas Nitzah Eilu Sanhedrin. Hefshilash Gneseh Anovim Eilu Tzadikim Shebechol Davidar. These are the Tzadikim of every generation. Amar Rav Gamliel. Rav Gamliel says that Adayim Tzrichim Anel Medoi. We still need the explanation that Rav Elazar HaMedoi gave. Rav Elazar HaMedoi Omer, Geffen Zeh Yerushalayim, Shloisha Sarigim Zeh Migdash Melech LeKohen Gadol, Uka Prax Nitzah Eilu Pirchei Kohanim that work in the Beis HaMikdash, Hefshilu Ashkenazeh Eilu Anovim. Explain the Torah Tumima. Why is Rav Elazar HaMedoi's pshat so much better? So he explains, because the dream of the Sar HaMashkim was very connected to our being in Mitzrayim. And there was a goal, there was a tachlis in our being in Mitzrayim. The tachlis of our being in Mitzrayim was to leave Mitzrayim and ultimately have the Beis HaMikdash where we could worship Hashem. So that's why Rav Elazar Mardoi's pshat that speaks to that is the best pshat. Rav Shua ben Levi, Michael Rabbi Matanis. He gives a different interpretation to the dream. He says it's referring to the different matanis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Dar Rav Shmuel ben Levi, Geffen, Zatayra, Shlosh Surigim, Zeber Amud Onon Vamon. It speaks about the Ber Amud Vamon. So I saw a very beautiful pshat. The Torah is very much connected to the Ber Amud Onon Amon. Why is the Torah connected to them? Because we know it says in Pirkei Avos, Zer Dakish or Torah, how is a person successful in his learning? Pass the Melech Teichel, Maimim Surah Tishtoin, while Oretz at the Tishon. So what the Gemara here is teaching us, in order to be successful in one's learning, he has to have minimal requirements for Gashmias. And that's what the Gemara says. Torah, Geffen's a Torah, how is somebody successful Torah? If Ber, all he just needs is water to drink. And Amur Anon, and as the Farshim explained, what the Amur Anon, the Medrash says, would do, it would clean and iron their clothing, that they wouldn't need new clothing in the Midbar. They were satisfied with the clothing that they had. Amon also, the Mon came down in a Shemayim, and they weren't busy with the food that they ate. That's when Geffen's a Torah, they could be successful in the learning. Vikuparachas also Nitza, Eila Bikurim, refers to Bikurim, Hevshila Ashkenazel, Anovim Eilu Nesachim, refers to the Nesachim, which of course come from wine. And again, as the Mefarshim explained, what the Gemara is saying is that when Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim, where they went through the terrible Shibud, is where they were purified. So once they were purified, that's when they were able to receive the Torah. And once they were able to receive the Torah, they were also ultimately able to have a Beis HaMikdash, where they had Bikurim and the Sochim in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Yiri of Abba, Amar, Geffen El Yisrael, the Ken Weimer. And so does the Pasuk refer to Klal Yisrael as a Geffen? But the Pasuk says, Geffen Mitzrayim Tasiya, the grape traveled out of Egypt. Klal Yisrael was the grape that left Egypt. Shlosh Yisrigim, Eilu Shlosh Yirgolim, Shisrael Eilu Mebuchal Shona. It refers to the Shlosh Yirgolim that we go up to the Beis HaMikdash every year. Vika Parachas, Higiyaz Manim, Shisrael Lifers Lirbois. The message was that now was the time that Klal Yisrael was supposed to leave Mitzrayim and start being able to multiply. The Kane Weimer of Bnei Yisrael Paro V'Yishitzu, although the Mefarshim do make a point that this Pasuk of Bnei Yisrael Paro V'Yishitzu isn't after they left Mitzrayim. Actually, this Pasuk is stated before they left Mitzrayim. Also, Nitzah, the Giyaz Man Shisrael Legoyal, the Kane Omer, V'Yez Nitzcham Abagodai, V'Chol Mabushay Agolti, the time has come for Mitzrayim to suffer. And the Sefer Torah Chaim says that since we see in this explanation that it's very connect, the dream was very much speaking about Klal Yisrael leaving the Mitzrayim. So it says if we look in the dream of the Sar HaMashkim, the word Kais is mentioned four times. And that's why we drink Pesach by night four kaises, four cups of wine. Vayimdar Merava, Sholosh kaises hamuras Mitzrayim lomoy, Echad Shishasu v'may Moshe, V'echad Shishasu v'may Paro Nechoy. That was when Nebuchadnezzar defeated Egypt. V'echad Shasidu Lishtas Kolad Kachavim with all the rest of the world, with the rest of the Akum, when the when Klal Yisrael prevails and Mashiach comes. Amalei Rab Abba l'Rab Yirmi v'Abba. Kidarsh lu Rav l'hani kroba agadata. When Rav would explain these psukim, kavasach derashalai, he would explain it as you explained it, that the entire dream speaks about Klal Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim. Ar Hashem ben Lakish, Shlakish gives a different explanation. Im mezu kegefen nimshala. Klal Yisrael is compared to a grapevine. Zemar Shaba, the branches are balabatim. Eshkolis, the grapes, are elo tamid chachamim. Olin Shaba, the leaves, are the Amir Oretz. Kunkana Shaba, just the sticks that are just like the Elam Elu Kunash of Yisrael, Vahan Shokh Mitam, and this is what they sent, Leboy Racha Atikla Shalaya, we should daven for the leaves, Dilmoli Alya, if not for the leaves, Lemskai Meskalya, then the clusters wouldn't survive. Which means that we should Toshib Shat, we should daven for the success of the leaves. The leaves refer to those who support those of who learn Torah, because if not for those who support Torah, then there would not be anybody who will be able to learn Torah. That's Pasha Pshat. I saw a beautiful Pshat from the Chak of a Rebbe. He says, whenever you have a Zvulun Yisachar relationship, where Zvulun is the person supporting those that learn Torah, so we all assume that the Yisachar, those that are learning Torah, are the primary partners. But if you think about it, he makes the observation, a person who's supposedly learning Torah is not always learning Torah as he's supposed to. Is he really learning Lishma? Is he not wasting any time from his learning? And therefore, his learning needs to be examined if it is indeed the proper way of learning. But if we look at the people who support those that learn, they are supporting them with the proper intention. They're taking their hard-earned money, and their hard-earned money they're using to support the one they have Torah. So therefore he points out that maybe it's not the one they Torah who are supporting those that are supporting them, but actually maybe the other way around, that those who are supporting the Lambei Torah, whose intention is such a righteous, pure intention, are the real people who are supporting those that are learning. The Pasuk says in Hosea regarding Klal Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim, V'echro li b'chamisha esa kesef, and I brought Klal Yisrael to me for 15 pieces of silver. And the Pasuk says, in a chomer a barley and a lesach a barley. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Shim Ve'etzadik, en kira el lashem mechira. The word kira means to sell. Shenemar, as the Pasuk indeed says, when the Pasuk refers to Avram Avinu buying the Maris Machpela, the Pasuk says, b'kivri asher karisali. B'chamisha asr, z'chamisha asr b'nissan, it refers to the 15th day of Nissan, Shabbai Nigal Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, that was the day that we left Mitzrayim. Kesef refers to the tzaddikim. V'kein oimer, tzror ha-kesef lokach b'yodai. The Pasuk refers to Klal Yisrael to tzror ha-kesef. Chaim Sairim, Philosoph Sairim, Elu Aboim Chamishim Tzadikim Sha'olim Skaim Behem. These are the 45 Tzadikim that the world will rest on them. So as the Mishnah explains, first the Pasuk calls Tzadikim Kesef, and then the Pasuk calls Tzadikim Sairim. So he explains that Bizman Shi Yisrael Oisim Ritzani Shamakim. When Klal Yisrael act appropriately, then the Tzadikim have greater ability, and they're called Kesef. Bizman she'en Yisrael oisim mitzayin shemakim. When Klal Yisrael aren't acting properly, the tzaddikim are also not as powerful, and they're called sairim. Chaimer sairim v'lesach sairim. The chaimer is 30 saw barley. The lesach is 15 saw barley. For a total of 45. Refers to the Abayim v'chamish tzaddikim sh'olam skayim v'hem. Refers to the 45 tzaddikim that the world rests upon them. Then yedeya. And we're not quite certain, says the Gemara. In shloshim kan v'chamish asr et Yisrael. If 30 are in Eretz Yisrael, 30 are in Chutz Laretz, and 15 are in Eretz Yisrael, or in Shloshim Eretz Yisrael, or if 30 are in Eretz Yisrael, Chamish Asa Kana, 15 are in Chutz Laretz. Shloimer, when the pasuk says, "Ek Shloshim Akesev, Vayisach Oishem Beis Hashem Al Yitzer," so the pasuk speaks about the Shloshim Akesev being thrown where it is the Beis Hamikdash. That's a proof that Shloshim 30 are in Eretz Yisrael. Chamisha Sakana 50 on Chutz Laretz. Amar Abaya says Abaya Brubai Mishtachi. Most of these tzaddikim of Eretz Yisrael Mishtachim Beit Knishta D'Tutsi Apa are found in that base at Knesset. I saw two pshatim. One pshat is that they are found in a shul that wasn't really frequented by very great individuals, but that is where you'll find these great tzaddikim. Or another pshat is that when you come into the shul, and you and see people sitting in the back and in that great seats, that's where the tzaddikim are. The tzaddikim aren't necessarily found amongst the people who are sitting in the very prestigious places. On the contrary, they're found in the place in the not great seats. V'ayinu d'ksiv, v'ayim aleihem im toy b'neichem hov v'schori v'mlu chadlu v'yashku l'schorim shloshim kesef. Yehuda Omer, what are the Shloshim Kesef? Ela Shloshim Tzaddikim Umas Olam Shumas Olam Skayim Aleim. These are 30 Tzaddikim that the Umas Olam rely on. Machlokes HaRishonim, what does it mean that the 30 Tzaddikim that the Umas rely on, are those 30 Tzaddikim from members of Klal Yisrael, or are the 30 Tzaddikim from the Umas, from the non-Jewish nations that are the ones that because of them the Umas Olam have a keen. Ulama, Eilin Shloshim Mitzvah Shekibla Noyach. These are referring to the 30 mitzvahs that the Goyim have accepted them. And even though they've accepted 30, says Ula, they mekayim el shloisha, they only keep 3 of them. Achas, what are they? Achas and Kaisim Ksubal Sukharim. Even if they're weak and they have homosexual relations, they don't legislate it into a marriage. Vachas she'ein shoklim b'osar ameisu makulim, they don't sell human meat in the street. And again, most mafarshim explain that they do indeed eat human meat. They just have enough respect not to sell it in a store publicly. Vachas she'mechavim satira, that they honor the Torah and they honor those that learn Torah. We learned in the Mishnah regarding the Gid HaNosha, the Eina Noeg Ba'if, that the Gid HaNosha isn't on a bird. There is no Gid HaNosha by a bird. Ask the Gemara, V'okach Hazin and the Islay. We actually see that there is one, that there is a Gid HaNosha, there is a sciatic nerve by a bird. Answer the Gemara, Islay. A bird has one, but it doesn't have that round shape. And as we learned in the Mishnah, in order for it to be considered a Gid HaNosha, it has to have that round shape. Ask the Gemara, by Rav Yirmiyah, Islay L'Oif for Ogil, if a bird has a round shape Gid HaNosha, or Islay L'Behemah V'Loy Ogil, or it doesn't have a round shape by an animal, Mai, what will be the halacha? Bos B'Dei Ezlinin, do we follow this specific animal or this specific bird, and therefore if it's not round by an animal or it is round by a bird, it will be also by the bird and mutter by the animal. A basamine is linen, or we follow them in, and therefore whatever is the Gid HaNosha, however it looks by an animal, it's usr, and however it looks by a bird, it's mutter. And the Gemara remains with a teiku. So the Rishonim paskin that since it's a teiku, we always have to be machmer by an animal, no matter how the Gid HaNosha of the animal looks, that it's usr. And by a bird, even if it has indeed the round shape, it should not be eaten. However, the Rishonim do point out, since it's not common that it should have that round shape by a bird, we don't have to go examine the Gidonosh of every bird to see if it has that round shape. Only if we happen to find that the bird had a round shape, Gidonosh, may we not eat it. So the Mepharshim asked, the Rishonim already asked, that we know that by tefillin, the halach is we're supposed to put on tefillin on the left hand, but the halach is if somebody is a lefty, if he's a left-handed individual, he puts on the tefillin on the right hand. So we see that we look at each person individually. So why shouldn't that be a raya for here as well? So I saw the Rishonim give a number of turutzim. One teretz, the two main turutzim that the Rishonim give, is by tefillin, the Torah says specifically, lo'ois al yotcha. And the halach is yad keha. It should be on the weaker hand. And therefore, we look at every individual, which is his weaker hand. That's one pshat that I saw. That the Rishonim suggests. Another teretz that they give is that the Gid Hanosha is Asatas, as we've been learning, because of the episode that happened with Yaakov Avinu. And as we discussed when we began learning this perek, the Gid Hanosha of a person looks like the Gid Hanosha of an animal, where it's rounded. So since that was a specific situation where the Gid Hanosha is also because of a round Gid Hanosha, that's why we look at the specific Gid Hanosha that happened, where this episode happened, and that's why it's certainly only there, not anywhere else. Another pshat that the Mepharshim suggests is that tefillin are supposed to have an influence on us. And the Torah, every specific individual is supposed to wear tefillin, and the tefillin that he wears influences him, is supposed to have that holy influence on him. So therefore we look at every person individually. Certainly that isn't the concept by the Gid Hanosha. This question that we're discussing, how do we look at situations where it's not normal, is where a person isn't like everyone else, is an interesting question that the Rishonim really discuss regarding Chalitza. We know that the halacha is that the Chalitza is supposed to be put on, when we do Chalitza, the Chalitza is supposed to be on the right foot. The shoe is supposed to be on the right foot. The Gemara Masechta Yevamos learns it from a Gzeir Shava, from a Metzaira. And the question that the Rishayim already discussed is what happens if the Yavam is a left-footed person? Again, do we look at the person and therefore by him his left foot is the stronger foot and therefore the shoe should be on his left foot? Do we look at all people that the Torah is teaching us that the Chalitza shoe should always be on the right foot? Because it really, explained the Mepharshim, dependent on the two answers we gave by tefillin. Why a left-handed individual puts tefillin on the right hand. If we say because it's a special limud of yotcha, yad keya, so that's a special limud by tefillin, nowhere else. And therefore, even though this person is a left-footed individual, the chalitza shoe should be put on the right foot. On the other hand, if we the other teretz, that the Gid Hanosha is different, because the Gid Hanosha commemorates what happened by Yaakov Avinu, and by Yaakov Avinu, it was a rounded Gid Hanosha. So if so, that's everywhere else, everybody has the same, then we say, everywhere else we have to look at each individual separately. And indeed, the left-footed individual would have to have the chalitza shoe on his left foot. So, in the Paiskim, there are a number of opinions. Some say that they should do chalitza when the yavam is a left-footed individual. They should do chalitza both from the right foot and the left foot. But then I saw a very interesting opinion amongst the Paiskim that say perhaps such an individual is not a candidate for chalitza at all. Because as we said, the Gemara teaches us that chalitza is supposed to be done on the right foot. But this person, maybe the halacha considers as if he's an individual that doesn't have a right foot, because his right foot is weaker than his left foot, and he therefore may not be a candidate to be able to do chalitza at all. Perhaps in a situation like this, if there are more than one brother, and there is a brother who's truly a right-footed individual, the chalitza should be done on from that brother. An interesting tshuva from the David Misharim, from the Chibina Rav. We also know, he says, that one of the reasons we're supposed to wear tefillin on the left hand is because the tefillin should be near our heart, which is on the left side. So he asks, why would be the halacha, where indeed you have a person who's a right-handed individual, and therefore his tefillin should be normally worn on the left hand, but he's a person, there are such people, who have his heart on the right side, not on the left side. Where should he wear, or which hand should he wear his tefillin? And the Chibina Rav paskens that certainly he should wear his tefillin on the left hand. The Mishnah taught us, v'noy b'shalil, that the Gid Anosh applies to the shalil. Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't. And then the Mishnah says, v'chel b'mutter. Amr Shmuel, so Shmuel says, since we see that the Mishnah mentions a machloikis regarding the Gid, but not regarding the Chalif, chel b'mutter d'rekel. It must be that everybody agrees that the Chalif, that this statement is unanimous, everybody agrees that the chalav is mutter. But the question asked the Gemara is chalav d'mai. What do we mean when we? What does the Mishnah mean when it says that the chalav is mutter? Elay me the shlil. If we're going to say that it means the chalav of the shlil, ask the Gemara. That can't be. But mitzvah pligibay. We actually find the remainder of Yehuda debate. What is the status of the chalav of a shlil? The Tanya, the Brisa says. Noig b'shlil v'chel by aser, that the iser of the Gid Anosha applies by the shlil, and the chelev of the shlil of the fetus is aser. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda Omer ein noig b'shlil. There is no iser of Gid Anosha on the fetus, and furthermore v'chel by mutter. V'amar b'lezer amar b'aisha machlokes ben de shechai. How do we explain this machlokes? It goes back to machlekes that we discussed when we learned the halachas of ben pekua. Now we learned that a fetus that's found in its mother's womb is mutter as part of the mother, as being part of the mother. But we had in the Mishnah machlekes or Meir of Yehuda if the fetus is already a full term fetus and it's alive. Ben tishachai. Rameya holds that fetus doesn't become mutter through its mother. Rav Yehuda holds it does. V'holach Ramei l'shitasai, Rav Yehuda l'shitasai. Each one of them are following their opinion. Rebeir, who says that the fetus is considered a full-fledged fetus, is considered, that's why the chelbay is asur, like the chelav of any animal. Rav Yehuda says that this animal is not this uber, is not considered an independent animal, it's not mutter. So we see that when Shmuel says chelboy mutter, it can't be the chelav of the shlil. Of course, the Rishonim ask a number of questions. One question they ask is, why did the Gemara have to bring Rav Oshia's explanation of this braisa? Of course, when we see the braisa, we see that this is the machlokes of Meir Rabbi Yehuda. What is Rabbi Yishe adding? And furthermore, they ask, why is Shmuel, the Gemara is saying that that can't be what Shmuel means? Because Shmuel, because here we see that the subject of the chelav of the shlil is a machlokes of Meir Rabbi Yehuda. Who says that Shmuel is obligated to agree with Rabbi Yishe's interpretation of the braisa? Explain the Rishonim. The Rashba says this. That the Gemara, were it not to have Reb Oishia's explanation, they perhaps we could say that the Gemara is speaking about the Chelba Mutter is talking about the real Chelev of a Shlil, and The machlokes is what is considered chaylev. Is chaylev only something that's put on the mizbeach? We know that chaylev of animals put on the mizbeach. And since this chaylev is not put on the mizbeach, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds it's not considered chaylev. Rameh says it is considered chaylev. But it has nothing to do with the chaylev of the shlil, with the basic halakha of the chaylev of the shlil. Only after Oishi introduces this halakha, and he so very much connects it to the machlokes of Rameh and Rabbi Yehuda. And we see that the halakha of chaylev has nothing to do with the halakha of what is considered chaylev for the mizbeach, do we have a question, what does Shmuel mean? Ella, says the Gemara, chel b'digid. They're arguing, with Shmuel saying, that the chaylev that's on the gid is mutter. Everybody will agree that it's mutter. Ask the Gemara, how could we say, how could Shmuel say that that's pshat in the Mishnah, and everybody's agreeing that that chaylev is mutter? Hamiflik paligba. We find that it's actually the subject of a machlokes. The Tanya, gid anosha, when it comes to speaking about removing the gid anosha, mechater achor b'kol makom shehu, we have to completely get it out. Even where it's in the flesh, we have to try to get out the gid anosha. B'chaytik sham lemekarim, we have to completely remove the chaylev. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Yudaymer, gramim ma'ashafei. It's enough just the part on top where you have the flesh, where it's exposed, that has to be removed, nothing more. So we see that it is a machlokes regarding the shamna, the chelba, the gid. Says the Gemara, loylam chelba, the gid. We will agree. Shmuel is still speaking about the chelba, the gid. Moed Shmuel, the Rameyim, the Rabbanan also. Shmuel says that according to Rameyim, this fact is also the Rabbanan. That means, our Mishnah speaking, Midaraisa. In Midaraisa, everybody agrees that the Chelboi the Gid is Mutter. When Rameya says that the Chelboi the Good is Osir, it's only Midarabon. And Shmuel was speaking but Midaraisa. And as the Mepharshim point out, why would Shmuel say this? That Mishnah saying Chelba Mutter, but at the end of the day it's Osir, even if it's Osir Midrabonim. So he says, because the reason the Ritva explains, Shmuel's trying to teach us this, that the Chelboi the Gid is Osir, is only a Chumrah that Klai Yisrael accepted upon themselves, not something that is even considered a regular Halacha of the Rabbonim. The Tanya, the Shamne Mutter, the Shomun Hagid is really Mutter, the Yisrael Kedoshim Nog Beser, but Klai Yisrael Machmer not to eat it. My Lav Rameyhi, isn't it found opinion Rameya? Dama Mutter Min HaTayra of Osmid Rabbanan. So we see that even according to Rameya, it's only Osmid Rabbanan, not Midaraisa. Says the Gemara, why is that a Raya, Ramai, Dilma Rabbi Yehudihi. Maybe this Braisa reflects the opinion of Yehuda. Avo Ramei, Ramei will indeed hold, but the Raisa, Nami Osa. Says one of Lois Alkadata. The Tanya, Gira Nosha, the Braisa says, another Braisa that says, Gira Nosha, Mechatet Achrov, Bekom Mokim Shehu. You have to completely try to get out the entire Gira Nosha, even where it's in the flesh. The Shamnei Mutter. Mam Shamnei, this lechatita. Who is the mandama that holds that we have to do chatita? So we just finished saying that that is the opinion of Rameya. And even though it's the opinion of Rameya, yet the Braisa says shamle mutter. So we see that even Rameya, when he holds that the shuman is asur, he holds it's only asur midrabanon, not midaraisa. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yish, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Maras Amar Rav. When the Torah speaks about the Gid Anosha being Osir, it only refers to the Kukkani Shabai. The Gid itself, the nerve itself, is hard and inedible. It's referring to the soft, edible parts that grow out of the Gid, that it's Osir. Ula Omar, Eitzu, but Torah Chayvalah. Indeed, the Gid itself is just an Eitz. It's like a piece of wood. But that's exactly what the Torah said we may not eat. And it's a machlokes rishonim how to understand this Gemara. The Rashba explains the Gemara that the machlokes between Rav and Ula is the shaila that we've already mentioned. Em yesh begidim benoisim tamo, em begidim benoisim tamo. Shmuel, Ula's of the opinion, em begidim benoisim tamo, that gidim don't have a tam, and yet the Torah said that the gid that doesn't have a tam is also. Rav, on the other hand, holds yesh begidim benoisim tamo. And the Rashba explains very beautifully. They can't be arguing on a metzias, on a fact, does the gid have tam or does the gid not have tam? Because you could taste it and know if it has tam or not. Rather, what is the machloikis? The machloikis is that according to Rav, the gid doesn't have tam. So that couldn't be what the Torah said we shouldn't eat. It must be, when the Torah told us not to eat something, it meant the kunkanois, which do have tam. Shmuel and Ula, on the other hand, says that the gid, green with Rav, doesn't have tam. And even though it doesn't have tam, the Torah teaches us that this gid, without the tam, is what's also to be eaten. There are other explanations to this machloikis, because the problem with this explanation that the Rashba offers is that, if so, the machloikis between Rav and Shmuel turns out to be a machloikis tanoim, and yesh begidim benoisim tam, and begidim benoisim tam. And then the Gemara would have said, leimukat tanoim. And therefore, the Tosfos says that according to Rav, is the machloike, the Tana holds that em yesh begidim nois and tam, is, do we include in that the kinkonos? That's the mandama that holds yesh begidim nois and tam. The mandama em begidim nois and tam says we don't include the kinkonos. And Ula holds just the opposite. It's interesting to point out that we paskin that ain begidin benois and tam. We follow Ula's pshat that even though the gidin don't have a tam, there's a special gzeiros akosif that you can't, that the gidin even without tam may not be eaten. So the Prima Gaddim considers the following question: we know that normally to be, when the Torah says you may not eat something, to be over, you have to eat a kederach achila. While bir halacha by the gid, will the din of kederach achila apply by the gid as well? Since the gid is not nois and tam, it isn't edible, so maybe the halacha of yesh begidin the nois and tam doesn't apply. However, the Prima Gaddim says that kederach achila and the sinas tam don't travel together, and therefore, even if somebody ate the gid, shloike derech achila, he would not be chayiv. The Miches Chinuch, in fact, says that if somebody went and mixed something bitter into the gid, so you would say that the gid is anyway not good tasting, and it shouldn't change the halakha. Says the Prima Gaddim that no, he would. Says the Miches Chinuch that he would not be chayiv for eating the gid hanosha. And there's a very interesting Avi Ezri that takes this point even further. He says that in order for someone to get malchus for eating the gid hanosha, he actually has to spice and season the gid hanosha that it should have somewhat of a good taste. Because otherwise, he says, it will remain in the category of shloike derech achila. And as the Prima Gaddim just taught us, that if you eat the gid, shaloi kederech achila, you're not chayiv. So in order to be chayiv for eating the gid anosha, he suggests not only if you mix something bitter into it, or you ate shaloi kederech achila, will you not be chayiv, but he takes it even a step further. You have to first make it taste good, and only then will you be chayiv for eating gid anosha. Continues the Gemara, Amar Abaya, the opinion of Ula makes sense. Dar Sheshes Aravasi, Chutin Shebechelev, Asurin Echayogalim. The threads of thin nerves and blood vessels that we find and the animal, we're talking about such thin nerves and blood vessels that go through the area where there's chaylev. Chutish b'chaylev asurim ben chayov noyim. Alma, chaylev am rachmana. When the Torah says that we may not eat chaylev, the Torah means the chaylev loy chutin, not the chutin that come out of the chaylev. Hachinami, so too when the Torah speaks about the gid anosha, gid am rachmana, the Torah says refers to the gid, v'loy kunkonais, not the soft offshoots of the gid. That's not what the Torah meant when it said that the gid anosha is off.